so much of managing cross-functional workflows is managing people's egos. Dottie, her skills never wavered. Because she didn't have to work on strengthening her skills almost at all, her biggest strength and value add to the team was her ability to manage everybody else's ego.
To the Fast Forward Podcast. We are continuing our conversation on shifts of change. So what shifts when we enact change through organizational development? I want to continue leveraging this conversation to think about both our personal and professional lives. And in this episode, I'm going to be talking about one of my mama's favorite movies. Every time this will come on TV, she would make me sit out and watch it with her. And it is a really good movie, but it's just funny because as I was thinking about it, I was thinking about her and the parts that she loved. I was thinking about which order that I want to put the shifts. And for this particular episode, I was like, I want to talk about operations shifts because I think this one is more, it's probably the most misunderstood of all four of the shifts. Usually when we have to shift strategy, that makes sense to us. When we need to shift employee capacity, get people up to speed for new stuff, that makes sense. When we need to shift structure, that makes sense too. But with operations, a lot of times we localize change for operations. And in localizing change, we end up diluting the impact of operational change shifts. And we end up sometimes making changes take longer because we have to repeat steps over and over again. So I wanted to discuss operational change from a macro level rather than, again, really narrowing in on really small changes, because particularly if you're leading large teams, large organizations, or if you're an entrepreneur that's just leading an entire company, this is going to be super important for you to understand how wide-scale operational change can fundamentally shift your business. When we think about operations change, one of the main things that is changing is not just the core processes in a company, but the cross-functional workflows. What is a workflow? I take that word for granted all the time because I work in HR. And so I'm just talking about workflows constantly. But workflow, if we split the word apart, is exactly what it says. The flow of work through a company to accomplish a business's goals. If we think about, let's take building a widget of some sort, or actually food would be a really, that's a great example. So if we are selling plates of food, right? There is a department that is responsible for researching and creating recipes. There is a department that's responsible for sourcing the ingredients and the raw materials. There is a department that is responsible for hiring and retaining chefs and kitchen staff and all of the staff members that will be responsible for working at the location, delivery drivers if we're delivering it, staff to work in the kitchen for people to come pick it up if we're doing takeout, right? Or if people are eating in, that might include wait staff, servers, bussers who are coming to actually take the plates, folks who are working at the front of the house to greet people, et cetera. You also have the folks that are responsible for taking payments, processing payments, the IT staff that makes sure that the cash registers work, that makes sure that things are taken care of in the kitchen as far as technology too. Because a lot of what we do is run by AI. You might have a person who coordinates systems with your Grubhubs or DoorDashes or Uber Eats of the world if you are doing delivery through one of those services, right? So again, there are all of these pieces, and each of those individual teams, functions, functional areas has a set of processes, standards. They have success metrics, performance metrics, KPIs, OKRs, all of the alphabet soup of a company. So even if you just say, oh, I just want to make a change to how the sales team goes about making B2B sales. Let's say you also do catering. So instead of just selling individual plates, let's say you sell large catering services to businesses nearby. So you can cater lunches and take over enough for 20, 30 people. Well, if you change the salespeople's processes, that is impacting marketing teams' processes. That's impacting the kitchen staff. That's impacting procurement, right? And so things don't just occur in one little piece of the company, even if the change is only happening in one little piece of the company. And an operational shift requires you to have that macro lens to see how, again, cross-functionally, so across the functions, how will this change impact the way work is distributed, accomplished, recognized, and assessed. So with that being said, the movie that I thought would be a really good fit for today's conversation on operational shift is A League of Their Own. And in particular, I want to look at Dottie, who is the title character. Now, Gina Davis, who plays Dottie in the movie, she is a phenomenal actress. Loved her in so many things. But this movie, I felt, honestly, is probably one of her best roles just because she got to play such a well-rounded woman, I felt. So she is resilient and tough, but also empathetic and caring and compassionate. And she's a leader, but she also is able to fall apart in moments, and she is able to prioritize others, but then stand up and advocate for herself. And just all of those opposing ideas of womanhood show up so powerfully. And I love it. I really love this movie. And it's hilarious. I think that Tom Hanks is like in rare form. He's super funny. Him and Stillwell. The kid in this movie is hilarious. Again, Madonna is funny in the movie. Like, it's just a great cast. It's a great movie. So if you haven't seen it, or if you haven't seen it a minute, you should definitely go check it out. I picked Dottie because I feel like she, yes, she's the protagonist, but in a way, she's almost like the anti-hero. And I don't think we've discussed anti-heroes on Out of Scope before. So let's dig into that. The main reason why I would consider Dottie to be an anti-hero is because for most of the movie, she battles between selfishness and selflessness. And so if you think about what is a traditional anti-hero, they are not your typical martyr like we would think of most protagonists, but she's not quite a villain either. And most of how we see her selfish versus selfless battle show up is with her sister Kit. But honestly, it shows up in the way she engages with Tom Hanks's character. It's interesting because the way she engages with Tom Hanks is such a sharp departure from how she engages with her husband, Bob. And where with Bob, she is able to be this deeply feminine and nurturing role. But with Tom Hanks, it's like she got to fight. All her life, she had to fight. And I love that they show that battle, because as people and as leaders, we don't always get the benefit of being able to just be one way. And I think this is important in the operations conversation, because even in being a leader, sometimes we get in the mindset where it's like, you know what, bump all this, I'm just going to do my work. But unfortunately, so much of the work of a leader is in how we show up for others and is in how we manage relationships and group dynamics, even when it doesn't have anything to do with us. That too is our job. And we don't have the benefit of just laying into tasks to justify and to boost our ego like non-managers or non-leaders do. So an individual contributor, if they get frustrated and get tired of dealing with people, it's like, all right, well, let me just do my work. Like, I used to do that a lot in jobs. I'm like, I'm sick of y'all. Let me just mind my business and do my tasks. But as a leader, my task is managing y'all tasks, so I can't do that. Why this is important for operations is because so much of managing cross-functional workflows is managing people's egos. So if we think about Dottie's character in comparison to Kit, Dottie, her skills never wavered. Like, she was not only a natural talent, but she had also cultivated her talent. What she did naturally, Kit had to work overtime to be able to do. Because she didn't have to work on strengthening her skills almost at all, her biggest strength and value add to the team was her ability to manage everybody else's ego. That showed up in a myriad of ways. One, quite literally helping people to build their skills. So everybody got picked to be in the league because they had some type of extraordinary talent in whatever position they were playing or just overall player in baseball. Yes, but there was a lot of player development that needed to happen too, because there had never been a women's league at that level before. I mean, this women's league was replacing the MLB, which we all know is like the American pastime. Her ability to build the team skills through building individual capacity was, I mean, the impact was immeasurable. So that's one. But also her ability to get people in condition to be a star. And yeah, let's talk about that for a second, because you're taking women, many of whom lived in rural areas, you know, were used to playing the back role in the family, their housewives, stay-at-home moms, things like that. The idea that you would then be thrust into being the star of one of the most important pastimes in the country during a world war, that's insane. That takes a lot of mental fortitude. It takes a lot of grace. It takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of finesse. And most of the ladies didn't necessarily have that. Now, ironically, Madonna's character, she was like ready for prime time, right? In terms of image. But a lot of her learning was learning to be a part of a group and not see other women as competition, but rather as co-collaborators, and being able to see herself as more than a face and a body. And Dottie helped her with that a lot. She helped her, and by help, let me be clear, it wasn't always her explicitly doing something. A lot of times I feel like it was her showing up as herself. And in that regard, I would consider her an anti-hero as well, because she did not want to take that role. She didn't even want to be there, period. She went so that her sister could have a chance to go, because they weren't going to take her sister without taking her. And her willingness, though, to step into the role, to show up for people, beyond the fact that she could have just kicked back and been a great baseball player, and technically she would have been doing her job, but she showed up. And then also showing up for Tom Hanks and making sure that Tom Hanks knew that he had a role to play and would be accountable for playing that role. Now, obviously, that did not happen without a lot of friction. But I think it's important to note that her willingness to be an unrelenting leader encouraged him to be an unrelenting leader too, and in his own way. So obviously some behaviors he learned to temper, but even when she pushed him about the most extreme ways she showed up, she never quite asked him to abandon being himself. She accepted that he was a gruff man. She accepted that, you know, he was never going to be super nice. Like, I'm thinking of the scene when they were chewing tobacco and spitting. And it was like, yeah, that was a good spit. Okay, yeah, that was good. Right, like, she allowed people to still be a version of themselves while managing to cultivate the best version of themselves. And so when we think about operational change in a company and we're on a team, people don't, or they shouldn't have to abandon themselves to do their work. And when we ask people to abandon themselves just to do their work, we make change adoption almost impossible, because folks will naturally shift back into the previous way they did their work, because style impacts substance. So it doesn't matter what your task is. If your task is answering phones, if your task is writing reports, if your task is interviewing people, if your task is fixing systems, there's a way that you do your work. And even if I change the steps, even if I change the platform where I do it, even if I change who I send final responses to or whatever the case may be, 9 times out of 10, there's going to be a core element to my style that won't change. And if as leaders, we don't appreciate that and manage to maintain our appreciation for that in a way that employees can feel, we will make operational change completely impossible. Like it's just not going to be able to happen. And that's really the biggest issue with cross-functional change. That's why a lot of people only like that micro change, because it's easy to manage that, especially if you got your small little like fiefdom and you run it and people just defer to you and they don't question you. Then it's like, oh, you get to feel real good. But start involving 2, 3, 4 teams where they don't know you as much. You might not have the same types or levels of political influence. And you start talking about you got to enact a 12-month change project. Yeah, you're going to have some issues. Again, the biggest takeaway here is for leaders to recognize that cross-functional workflows require not just shifting tasks and responsibilities and outcomes, but really how can you retain style, core elements of style while making those shifts. The other main thing I want to bring up for Ms. Dottie is that a part of cross-functional workflows is helping people to dream new dreams. When I do my work, I am married to outcomes. Like if I do A, then B happens. If this happens, then this happens. And when you're changing workflows, you are asking people to change very important aspects of their marriage to their work, because 9 times out of 10, outcomes will change, stakeholders will change, reliability of stakeholders will change because the steps are changing. And in that, there is a loss of self in a way, because again, we love patterns as humans. This is just natural. If we don't manage the emotions and reactions around that, that will also hinder change adoption. So if we think about Dottie, Dottie initially is just waiting for her husband to get home, period. She like, I'm waiting on Bob to get back. That's my boo. Play baseball a little bit in the meantime to kick it, waste some time. But as soon as my boo get back, we back to what we was on. When Bob comes back, sure enough, she's like, boop. But she also realizes at a certain point that being Bob's wife is not incongruent with being a baseball star. And because she had never been able to reconcile what those two identities would look like together, she felt like abandonment of one meant appreciation for the other. But abandonment and appreciation are not the only options, right? They're not the only choice. Part of what we will accomplish as leaders too is helping people to see new dreams and dream new dreams of a hybrid self. This happens a lot with technology change because people get used to doing their job a certain way. And a lot of times we prop up technology to say like, oh, it's going to make your job easier. But if I have a certain type of pride in navigating the difficulty of my job, it feels insulting if you try to make my job too easy. Like if I know I've staked my work day and my pride is steeped in my ability to make 10 phone calls to get one step done, and this takes 3 days, but I've been doing it for 7 years and getting it done. And you come talking about, oh, we got an app that's going to replace all of that. It's like, excuse me, I ain't answer that, right? Like you feel that efficiency is the main goal when really accomplishment is. And accomplishment means something very different to different people. So as a leader, when you're managing the shift, don't forget to account for self-image in that. And that's a part of ego too. Let's say something will make something much easier or it's going to shave a bunch of time. If you know your people, which you should, and if you understand your people's role very well, which you should. You should know the job task groupings, the job duties, time allocations for things, core stakeholders that they interact with regularly for tasks, etc. If you know all of that, you can be able to start filling the gaps for them. Because remember, if they, let's say, okay, it's a 40-hour work. If this particular bank of tasks eats up 40% of that and it's going to shave it down to where it's only going to take 10, I don't want to imagine 30% of my work week gone. Like that 30% and the tasks associated with that 30% meant something. So as a leader, I'm going to automatically start putting and filling in some other rewarding work to fill in that 30. And for the real razzle dazzle, I might ask for the employees' input so they feel like they have ownership. I might already know what's possible, what they're going to pick, but I'm going to be like, well, what you think? You know, here's some other stuff that we thinking of adding on. Like, would you want to be involved in that? What would that look like? That helps to massage the ego. That increases the likelihood for change adoption. And it increases the likelihood that people are going to use their influence to make the change process smooth. Because if you piss off the wrong person and then they get upset and want to drop out, they're going to cause other people to get frustrated too. And now we got a disaster on our hands. So again, for Dottie, being empowered to dream new dreams and see herself as both housewife and baseball star and live a life that integrated the two instead of chose either or, that paved the way for other people to feel comfortable being who they are. And ironically gave her the confidence to let go of needing to be the star, which is why she let go of that ball and Kit was able to seem like the winner. Because she knew, like, I ain't have to let that go. But because I know I'm just as comfortable being Bob's wife as I am being this baseball star and just participating, not necessarily being the winner, you can go on and have that one. I'm good. Right? All of these things matter as a leader because it's not just you. And that's the main takeaway from the cross-functional workflow piece of operations change. So many players are involved and you're constantly managing egos, but it's worth it. Because once you do the early legwork of managing egos, then people will start to self-manage and they'll make each other accountable and start to check each other. And you won't have to be as hands-on. But early in the change process, 9 out of 10, friend, you're going to have to be all up in that. So get used to it and get comfortable. So what do you think? What were your perspectives on Dottie's leadership style and how she shifted the operations changes? How did she show up for herself and for others? And did you love the movie? Again, A League of Our Own, that was like a staple in my house. But I would love to hear what you think, too. Let me know down in the comments. And of course, be sure to like, share, and subscribe. And I will catch you in the next one. Bye.